Welcome to Window on North Korea. I'm Fran Kelleher, your host. This episode will try to cover what we know about what everyday North Koreans know and think about the developing thaw in relations between North and South Korea. Before the historic meeting of Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in on April 27th of this year, there was a good deal of optimism among North Koreans about its prospects to bring about an improvement in relations between the two countries. Young people looked forward to a lightening up of restrictions on accessing outside media, hoping they could then binge-watch South Korean movies for a month. Elderly North Koreans looked forward to unification, saying the unified country would be strong with North Korea's resources and South Korea's well-developed technology. The combined national defense forces, including, they assumed, the North's nuclear weapons, would be a formidable regional power. They assumed the nuclear weapons their leadership had worked so hard to develop at the expense of their own well-being would be part of the mix, since, as recently as March of this year, directives were being issued to high-level officials to continue to vigorously promote the nuclear program. An article on the dailynk.com website, dated March 23rd, titled "Lectures Urge North Koreans to Remain Firm in Resolve to Possess Nuclear Weapons," included this observation from a source inside North Korea about the then-recent meeting between Kim Jong-un and a special high-level delegation from South Korea. Quoting, "There has been a specific order to use the visit as propaganda, emphasizing that South Korea has raised the white flag by visiting us, giving credence to our path as we transition to becoming a nuclear power, a moment to be remembered in history as a great victory." The fact that Kim Jong-un has been using denuclearization prior to the meeting to bring the U.S. and South Korea to the discussion table, while simultaneously promulgating strength as a nuclear power inside North Korea, raises questions about the country's willingness to divest itself of its nuclear weapons. End quote. Again, this article was dated March 23rd of this year. North Koreans were aware of the North-South Summit on April 27th at Panmunjom, though they weren't able to watch it live, as much of the rest of the world was. North Koreans are frequently kept in the dark by their own state media about international developments, even those involving North Korea itself. In this case, the Rodong Sinmun, the official newspaper of the North Korean government, ran a front-page story about the meeting the morning of the meeting day, and many had become aware of it earlier. Interest in the happening was intense, and people were understandably quite surprised and encouraged that it was happening at all. Anyone anywhere would have been surprised, even just a few months ago. As I said at the beginning, optimism about the prospects for unification grew with awareness of the summit. Within a few days, news of the summit, including the Panmunjom Declaration signed by Moon and Kim, were published in full in the Rodong Sinmun newspaper. Most North Koreans still could not watch video of the meeting because of the shortage of electricity throughout the country, but the government promised to prepare a commemorative film about the summit that would be shown at workplaces. On May 3rd, a dailynk.com article titled "North Korean Authorities Monitoring Domestic Reaction to Summit" reported that authorities are reportedly expecting potential backlash or negative effects of mentions of denuclearization in official state coverage of the event. This article tells us more about how everyday North Koreans' behavior is monitored and influenced, so I'll read directly from it now. A source in Ryanggung Province described a recent incident during a conversation with Daily NK on April 30th, saying, quote, "People were gathered around talking about the inter-Korean summit when the Socialist Women's Union leader suddenly came over and informed them that, quote, the party had issued orders for a domestic review of the people's reactions," end quote. She also said that they should be more careful with their words and instead say positive things about the country's efforts, the source continued, saying that the remarks were a suggestion to the group to avoid problems that might arise if they are too open about their opinions of the summit. The source described how the gathering was an impromptu one, beginning with just a couple of people, but growing in size after word spread. The Socialist Women's Union leader, whose husband is a party cadre, actually said a lot of unconventional things at the gathering, the source explained. These so-called residential zone women, a term used in North Korea to refer to women who are part of the Socialist Women's Union and who are charged with the ideological education and socialist group activities of a number of households, have taken on the role of family breadwinners over the years through their market activities, subsequently rising in social status. Descriptions by a separate source in Rangoon province of one of these women openly acknowledging and suggesting tips for expected behavior in response to government orders represents a significant development, as she holds a position as an official local role model and thought leader in the eyes of the state. The Socialist Women's Unit leader apparently tried a number of times to encourage the group to speak positively about the government's efforts. She said that big changes are certainly coming, and that we should hold our tongues and have hope that the day will soon come when we can live easily, the additional source said. She also apparently described denuclearization as an end to the production of scary weapons when asked by someone in the group what the term meant. But despite the warnings people are receiving over expressing opinions about the summit, the source described frequently hearing optimistic talk of improving inter-Korean relations. Anywhere people are gathered, there are discussions of summit-related news, mostly expressing hopes about South Korea. One person said that relations will improve because President Moon looks like he's easygoing. Embedded in these remarks is a sense of longing for the South and to go forward living as one people together. End quote from the DailyNK.com article. So that was a little confusing at first. If people are optimistic about prospects for unification because of the summit, why do they have to be advised to speak positively about it? But what they are expecting and apparently hearing was backlash about Kim's use of the word denuclearization. By May 4th, the DailyNK.com had an article titled, North Korean Authorities Begin Workplace Lectures Covering Inter-Korean Summit. North Korean officials have been requiring attendance at these lectures, which laud Kim Jong-un's diplomatic prowess. Quoting here, the party official who delivered the lecture reportedly spent the entire day of April 28th, the day after the summit, in a meeting receiving official orders from the government regarding the style of propaganda to be disseminated to residents. The cadre only mentioned denuclearization once and did not elaborate or explain its meaning, he said. But he talked a lot about economic development and stressed at length the success of the summit. End quote. Unlike most of the other lectures workers are frequently required to attend, I would suspect, reactions to these lectures was described this way, quote, everyone paid close attention with keen interest in information regarding improving relations with South Korea, leaving the room so quiet you could hear a pin drop, end quote. If it can be considered good news that North Koreans are so optimistic about the prospect of unification, as premature as that might be, well, there's always some bad news to offset that optimism. In the immediate wake of the successful North-South summit, the North Korean authorities launched a new inspection unit to crack down on capitalist influences among the population. Apparently, this North-South friendliness might be getting a little carried away. In yet another DailyNK.com article from May 9th, an inside source from South Pyongan province said, the unit tasked with rooting out anti-socialist activity was formed by the central authorities and has become quite active recently. The unit is evaluating people's clothes and hairdos, engaging in fierce reprimands. This unit very carefully inspects all the contents of one's bags and belongings. If there are any illegal items found, they are unconditionally confiscated. If personal or corporate property has foreign language writing on it, it is judged to be anti-socialist and can therefore be confiscated. The party has invested the unit with wide authorities, giving it the power to go into markets and the factory enterprises. But they technically can't go into private homes unless people report suspicious activity first, the North Pyongan province-based source explained. He added that before the units became active, notices were handed down that said, if anyone is detected with the following, they must be unconditionally reported. Clothing that's not of our style, hairdos that aren't in our style, foreign songs and language that is not ours. End quote. Frankly, that sounds like the treatment immigrants get in some parts of the United States these days. Well, to end on a possibly better sign, apparently in the spirit of the North's attempt to improve its image, virulently anti-U.S. posters, normally so prevalent throughout Pyongyang especially, have been mostly taken down and replaced with posters having themes promoting things like increased industrial production, scientific achievement, and economic self-reliance. Sources for this episode were mostly from the DailyNK.com, but also a contribution from nknews.org. Window on North Korea airs approximately alternate Saturdays at 10 a.m. on KTWH Two Harbors Community Radio.